There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And warm up from the low, welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by Jared Smith, who does tremendous work here at the network. We're going to be diving in with him as to what he's all taking a look at in the yes run, no run first inning market. Some of his early takeaways from the first week and a half of the baseball season as well. And then in the final segment, we're going to give you guys picks and analysis on every single game on the betting board for this Baseball Tuesday. As we touch them all, I know that Jared is going to have a lean or two on the Tuesday card as well that he's going to be sharing with us. And if you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at @GNN_41. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, but we had a fun day of baseball Monday. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
So far this season, the best team on the run line has been the old Pittsburgh Pirates. They are now 9-2 on the run line, whether that be laying a run and a half or getting a run and a half, and they got the job done once again on Monday. They take down the Detroit Tigers by a count of 7-4 for the Tigers. Not the start that they were looking for out of Reese Olson, who gives up 6 runs over the course of 4 1/3 innings. You did have the bullpen from there do a solid job. Joey Wentz, 2 scoreless innings. Will Vest, pair of outs out of the bullpen. And Tyler Holton, he gives up a run in an inning. That run that Holton gave up a solo home run, as it was Brian Reynolds getting his second home run season. And Mitch Keller looked a bit better in this start. 9 strikeouts in 6 innings. Was experiencing a little bit of velocity dip. Looked like it's starting to come back to him a little bit. And for the Pirates, they went 6 of 16 with men in scoring position. And the bullpen did their part as well, as you had a combined 2 innings from Josh Fleming and Aroldis Chapman. 1 unearned run given up. They were hurt by an error or two out there in the field. Ryder Ryan, he does give up a run in an inning, as O'Neill Cruz, 3rd error of the season, was a little bit costly there. But the Pirates, they find a way to get the job done, and they're able to get a nice win. And right now, the team has the worst on the run line. That would be the Miami Marlins. They have covered just 1 out of their first 11 games on the run line, and they are 1-10 straight up. Completely shut out by the New York Yankees. 7-0 the final. Jesus Luzardo just got banged around like a pinata. 7 runs surrendered in 4 2/3 innings, including a pair of home runs. Juan Soto, Anthony Volpe both get their second home run season. Bullpen from there did solid. Matt Andrews, 2 scoreless innings. Birch Smith, 1 1/3 innings scoreless. But for the Marlins, they muster 2 hits against Nestor Cortes, who had really been struggling coming into the start. 8 scoreless out of him. And then Josh Majewski was able to come in. He lends a scoreless inning as well. We saw a slugfest out in the great city of Cincinnati, as Cincinnati was on to being able to get a win over the Milwaukee Brewers. This by a count of 10-8, as for the Milwaukee Brewers and the Cincinnati Reds. Neither team was necessarily getting the start that they had desired. Aaron Ashby, 8 runs, 4 of which were earned, given up in 3 2/3 innings, including home run going deep for the Cincinnati Reds off of Will Benson, his second home run season. Then Ellie De La Cruz, he gets a pair of home runs in this one. First and second of the season, one comes off of J.B. Bukakis, gives up a solo home run in his inning of work, and then the other off of Brian Hudson, just one run given up in his inning of work. Joel Piance, Bryce Wilson, they both land a scoreless inning, and he did have a pair of home runs for the Brewers as Bryce Terang was able to go deep off of Graham Ashcraft, his first home run season. Then Christian Yelich, he's able to get home run number 4 of the campaign as that one comes off of Justin Wilson, who gave up 2 runs in a third of an inning. Now, Graham Ashcraft did complete 5 2/3 innings, but he did allow that home run. 5 earned runs, 6 runs in total is what he surrendered, but bullpen at his back. Lucas Sims, Alexis Diaz, Fernando Cruz, they are all able to lend a scoreless inning, so the Cincinnati Reds are able to get a win, and the Brewers still a relatively solid 6-3 start to the season for them. The Chicago White Sox, not off to such a good start. They are now 1-9 straight up, as the Cleveland Guardians are 8-2, by the way. 4-0, they take down the Chicago White Sox. Tanner Banks was essentially the opener for a bullpen game. Gives up 1 run and 2 1/3 innings. Jared Schuster actually looked good in long relief as well. 3 scoreless innings. Dominic Leon gives up a run in an inning. Tim Hill, ditto for him, a run given up in an inning. And Brian Shaw did allow his home run in his 2/3 of an inning as Jose Ramirez gets his second home run in the campaign. But the White Sox, they just were unable to muster offense. They stranded 9 men on base. They go 0-7 with men in scoring position, and they committed 3 errors in this one. It's just a myriad of issues for the sad, sad organization. Tristan McKenzie wasn't necessarily sharp, but no runs surrendered in 5 2/3 innings despite walking 4. Tim Aaron gets it out of the bullpen, and then you have Hunter Gaddis along with Emmanuel Clase and Cade Smith all lend a scoreless inning to be able to get the job done out there. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, they entered into Monday having scored 3 runs or fewer in 7 of the other last 9 games. They get to Luis Castillo at home on Monday, though. 5-2. The Toronto Blue Jays are able to get the job done as for the Jays. They get to Castillo for 4 runs over the course of 5 innings. No home runs, but they did a nice job just being able to play a little bit of small ball. From there, you did have a run and an end given up by Brett DeGuise, and 2 scoreless innings were added by Tyson Miller as well. And for Seattle, not a lot doing for them on offense. They did get a pair of solo home runs as Cal Raleigh was able to go deep off of Chad Green. First home run season, then Yimi Garcia gives one up to J.P. Crawford, a second of the campaign, but Jose Barrios. Very good start. 6 2/3 innings scoreless. Yimi Garcia gets 4 outs out of the bullpen, gives up his solo home run, and then Chad Green. Solo home run surrendered in his inning of work as well. The Houston Astros, they've been a little bit of an underwhelming team on totals this season, but now they get their 3rd over of the season. They take it to the Texas Rangers, 7-5 the final for the Astros. They were supposed to start Framber Valdez in this one, but he was a late scratch. Blair Henley, who I can't say is necessarily the world's greatest starter for the Houston Astros, this was a rough start for him. 5 runs surrendered in a 1/3 of an inning, and everyone else stepped up from there. Seth Martinez, 3 2/3 innings scoreless. You had 2 scoreless innings out of both Brandon Beelock along with Taylor Scott, and then Brian Abreu comes in for a scoreless inning. So Henley, in his major league debut, gives up 5 runs with getting 1 out, and then the Astros bullpen got 26 outs without allowing a single run. Just absolutely wild. And what else was wild was Andrew Heaney. He gives one up to Yordan Alvarez. Alvarez, 4th home run season, as Heaney was out long for this game. He gives up 6 runs in 3 2/3 innings, and then he did have 3 runs given up in 1 1/3 innings by Grant Anderson, as Anderson gives up a home run to Victor Carantini, his first of the campaign. Brock Burke, he got Brock enrolled. He did not record a single out, gave up 3 hits and a run. And then Jose Ureña, he did not Ureña all over this game. 4 scoreless innings out of him to be able to save the bullpen. For the Philadelphia Phillies, they save their best for last in terms of the offense. Not so much a pitching, as 5-3, they take down the St. Louis Cardinals. Cardinals were down 3-1 in the 9th inning. They are able to rally, and they get to Mr. Jeff Hoffman for a pair of runs out there in that one. As for Hoffman, he gives up 2 runs in an inning. And for Spencer Turnbull, another really nice start. Looks like he's returning to form. Gives up just 2 hits, no runs over the course of 6 scoreless innings. But Sir Anthony Dominguez, he did allow his home run in his inning of work, as it was home run number 2 for a catcher that's starting to grow on me, Ivan Herrera. He has looked really good for the Cardinals thus far. Meanwhile, Jose Alvarado, Gregory Soto both supply a scoreless inning. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, Brandon Marsh gets his 3rd home run season. That came in the 9th inning. inning off of Giovanni Gallegos, who gives up a solo run in a third of an inning. And for Miles Michael, it's not a bad start here. Two runs surrendered in 6 2/3 innings. Matthew Liberatore, 1 2/3 innings scoreless. And then Ryan Helsley, he gives up two runs, one of which was earned in the 10th inning to take the loss, as Andre Pallante also was able to provide an out of the bullpen scoreless. For the LA Dodgers, they have won over the last three regular seasons, dating back to the start of the 2022 season, 220 total regular season games. Just 35 of those have been by one run, and they win by multiple runs on Monday. 4-2, they take down the Minnesota Twins. Shohei Ohtani and James Outman both were able to take Jay Jackson for a ride, as Ohtani, third home run season. Outman, who's had his struggles, gets his first of the campaign. As for Minnesota, Bailey Ober gave a relatively good start. 7 punchouts, 1 run allowed over the course of 5 innings. Steven Okert, he gives up a run in an inning, but then Jay Jackson gives up those 2 solo runs in his inning work before Griffin Jacks, Cody Funderburk, they both end a scoreless inning. And for the Minnesota Twins, this has been one of the most anemic offenses out there in baseball. They have played 6 unders to 2 overs as far this season. Manuel Margot takes James Paxton for a home run, his first of the campaign, as Paxton still relatively solid. 2 runs surrendered in 6 innings. From there, Ryan Brazier, Danny Hudson, along with Evan Phillips, they're all able to end a scoreless inning to be able to get the job done out there. And for the New York Mets, the offense comes alive for them, as they've been a good team to the under thus far this season, but they were overwhelming against the Atlanta Braves. 8-7 the final. Brandon Nimmo wakes up for a pair of home runs, going deep off of Charlie Morton and A.J. Minter. First and second home runs of the season. Then Pierce Johnson gives one up to D.J. Turnitup Stewart, his first home run campaign, as for Pierce Johnson, gives up 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning. Minter gives up just the solo home run in his inning of work, and the starter, Charlie Morton, not a good one here. Gives up a home run, 4 runs in total, 5 walks in 5 2/3 innings before Aaron Bummer gives you an out of the bullpen, and Jesse Chavez, 1 2/3 innings scoreless. But for the Braves, they go just 3 of 15 with men in scoring position. Marcell Ozuna off to a really nice start to the year. He goes deep off of one Julio Teheran, his 5th home run season, as for Julio Teheran, I just love saying the name in that sort of a fashion. He gives up 4 runs over the course of 2 2/3 innings, and the bullpen didn't do a bad job there. Reed Garrett, 2 1/3 innings scoreless. He did have Cole Sulzer, Jake Diekman, both give up a run and an inning, and then Ode Lopez gives up a run and an inning, but Drew Smith scoreless inning. So the Mets, they're able to get the job done. They're able to get a win, and so was our DK Network write-up pick. We are now 8-5 on these thus far this season. As for the Colorado Rockies, not going to be able to say this very often, they get a win. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, I believe that they have lost every one of their road games thus far this season. 7-5, the Rockies get it done. Our play was on the over of 10.5, got bet up to 11, and it didn't matter whether you took 10.5 or 11. Write-up gets there. Zach Gallen, he had 10 strikeouts in 5 innings. Did allow 3 runs along the way, though, and Scott McGough, he lit the game on fire from there, giving up 3 runs, but he only went 2/3 of an inning. Joe Mantiply, he provides a scoreless inning, and then Luis Frias, 2 innings pitched by him, gives up a home run to Charlie Blackman, his first home run season for Kyle Freeland. Much better outing here. He had entered into the game giving up 17 runs while recording 17 outs. He does give up 4 runs in 5 innings, but only 2 of which was earned. He had Ryan McMahon not help out his cause. He created a fielding error out there, but from there, Peter Lambert, 2 scoreless innings. Justin Lawrence gives you a scoreless inning, and Nick Mears got into a bind. He gives up 3 walks in the 9th inning, including 1 run, but Jake Bird cleans up the mess. He's able to lend a scoreless inning, so the Diamondbacks now 4-7 to start the year. Less than savory out there, and this was very much less than savory if you're a Tampa Bay Rays fan. Just 1 run scored by them. The LA Angels, they get the job done by a count of 7-1. Zach Eflin, pretty Eflin awful. 5 runs surrendered over the course of 5 innings, and he gives up a home run to Mike Trout, who is very much on point to begin the season. 5th home run of the campaign. Tyler Anderson, he was tremendous. 7 scoreless innings out of him. Edin Zimber, 8 scoreless inning, and then Hunter Strickland, yes, he is still in the league. He gives up a run in his inning of work. As for the Rays, they had Jacob Legge's pack fill some innings. He goes for 3 innings, giving up 2 runs along the way. And you did see out west, the San Francisco Giants not get what they had desired out of Blake Snell in his first start. 8-1, the Washington Nationals get to him, and they get the job done for Blake Snell. 5 strikeouts in 3 innings, walk 2, not a sharp performance out of him. And then the bullpen was less than sharp as well. 3 1/3 innings from Kaiwei Tang, and he gives up 2 runs along the way. You had 2 runs given up by Landon Rupp, and he only got two outs out of him as well. And then you did have one of the Rodgers in Rodgers squared, and Taylor Rodgers be able to provide a pair of scoreless innings. But Eric Miller, he gives up a run and an inning. And for Rupp, he did allow a home run along the way. Lane Thomas, who has really struggled to start out the year, first home run of the campaign out of him. And Trevor Williams, good start here. One run surrendered in five innings from there. Derek Law, two scoreless innings. Dylan Floro, Matt Barnes, they're both able to supply a scoreless inning as the Giants go 0-10 with men in scoring position. And this was brutal if you were on the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs get up 8-0 in this game. They're up 8-0 going into the bottom of the sixth inning. And then they make like your buddy at the bar, and they cannot close as Fernando Tatis Jr. hits a walk-off home run. 9-8, the Padres get it done. Javier Assad, not a bad start here. Two runs surrendered over the course of five innings. He struck out seven. Now, he did give up a home run along the way, as for the Padres going deep off of him. You had Jake Cronenworth get his first home run of the campaign. From there, Fernando Tatis Jr. goes deep off of Edber Alzolay. That was in the eighth inning. Fourth home run of the campaign. And Xander Bogaerts goes deep off of Luke Little for his first home run of the season. So he came up big off of Little, who gave up his home run in his inning of work. Jose Quas, he gave up four runs, two of which were earned while getting just one out of the bullpen. You had a pair of errors by Miguel Amaya along with Dansby Swanson not help out. And then Edber Alzolay allows that home run to Fernando Tatis Jr. in his two-thirds of an inning of work. Hector Neris, he had a scoreless inning of his own. And for the Padres, Yu Darvish, not what you were looking for out of him. Gives up four runs in three innings. Pedro Avila gives up four runs in three innings. But from there, Wandy Peralta, Robert Suarez, Aniel De Los Santos, they're all able to supply a scoreless inning. So they're able to get the job done out there in the lovely state of California. And if you're taking a look at the trends of baseball right now, by the way, your best over teams right now, the Atlanta Braves and the San Francisco Giants. Not what you'd be expecting from the Giants, certainly what you'd be expecting from the Atlanta Braves. Six overs, two unders, and a push. But overall this season, it has been a very overwhelming season. 54.7% of games have been going over, 81 overs, 67 to unders. We've had quite a few pushes along the way, and favorites on the money line are doing relatively solid. 59.2% hit rate for favorites at 90 and 62 on road teams. They continue to have a nice tear. 81 and 74 is what they're performing on the money line. If you take a look at the last 7 days in baseball, it has been the home teams being able to see a little bit of sway for them. 48 and 38 on the money line. So after a very good start to the season for these road teams, it does feel like it's falling back to earth a little bit. And on Monday, we did see 7 overs to 6 under. So that's what we're seeing in baseball right now, and that's what we all got on Monday. Now let's turn it forward to Tuesday, and let's take a look at how Jared Smith, our good friend at VSiN, is looking at the yes run, no run first inning market. And we'll do so next right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events,
you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Visa Family Podcast. And it is always great to be joined by this man, as Jared Smith. He does absolutely excellent work on so many different fronts. You're able to catch him every weekend on Fox Sports Radio, taking a look at so many different things, especially when it comes to the college football season. He does tremendous work here at VSiN as our main yes-run, no-run first-inning guy, live on the line, and so much more. You're able to follow him on Twitter /X at Jared Lee Smith altogether. And Jared, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
No problem, Greg.
Always good to have you aboard. And Jared, I know you're getting all hyped up and you're getting ready to go with regards to yes run, no run first inning. You, much like myself, were doing an astute job taking a look at college basketball this year as well. But when it comes to taking a look at yes run, no run first inning in the early part of the season, how do you go about things? Because when it comes to the middle part of the season, you have a lot of data as to how the top of these orders, how these starting pitchers are performing with regards to first and second innings. And I do think that when it comes to the early part of the season, it can be a little bit more strange to take a look at things because we just don't have those data points that we're going to during the summer months.
Yeah, I always struggle with the beginning of the year. It's getting a little bit easier because there's so many different markets available now, not just Yerfy-Nerfy, but you can also bet on how many pitches there will be in the first inning. You can bet on all types of player props on the hitter side as well. So I just think the options available to you now give me a chance to maybe look through some markets early in the year that I wouldn't normally look at and just see where things stand. Because I do think the exotic markets, the derivative markets, the prop markets, that's where I like to swim in baseball. I don't bet a lot of traditional sides and totals. I'll dabble with some run lines, maybe some first fives. And then when we get closer to the postseason, I'll really start to ramp that up. But for the most part, my handicaps and my bets during the regular season, almost 100% props and derivative based. It is a slow build. I think after a couple weeks, you should feel comfortable. I think two starts through the rotation, each team gets 10 to 15 games of data points on the offensive side. You can start to formulate a vibe. For example, we're about 143 games. It's crazy. We're already 140 games in, but we're already starting to see a little bit of a Nerfy vibe to start to form, about 56% through the first 140 so games. So again, not a massive sample. We're only a couple of percent of the way through, but so far, in terms of the first inning, the offenses have lagged just a little bit.
Yep, and I think that it is interesting that you do mention a little bit of a Nerfy vibe to begin the season, because if you're looking at full game sides and totals, it has been the overs that have really been reigning supreme for the first few games of the season. But that said, we've been seeing a lot of first innings come up a little bit dry. What do you attribute this to? Because that really speaks to me when you have a lot of first innings going with the no run in the first inning, but a lot of full games going over, that it feels like the starting pitchers, for lack of better terms, are ahead of bullpens right now in regards to the way that they're executing.
Yeah, I think weather also is a factor. I don't know if we can rant on this show, Greg, but I'll be honest, the way that the baseball executives handle the schedule every year baffles me. Absolutely baffling. They continue to open up northern cities like it's the middle of May. They opened the season on the Sweet 16, which, as two college basketball junkies like we are, we didn't love that. I think that that is a big part of it. And I think if the schedule, for example, if we were starting the games today, first week of April, you know, I'm not going to say it's significantly better, but you might get one or two less 35 degree days where it's hard to hit, it's hard to pitch. And it makes our job as handicappers a little bit different because there's so many different vibes on the field. For example, in the NFL, you kind of know who the cold weather quarterbacks are and who can handle it. In Major League Baseball, there's so many more intricacies to when a game is played in extremely cold or frigid or weird weather. And I think it's the game that's most impacted by weather. So I never understand why we start. It seems like we start earlier and earlier every year instead of later and later. But the weather, to me, the first month of the season has more of an impact than we probably lead on.
Yeah, Ben, if I were Major League Baseball, I'd be trying to put as many games as humanly possible the first month of the season out there in the southern part of the country, the state of Texas, the state of California, Florida, what have you. Not so many games out there in an outdoor ballpark like Philadelphia or New York. Those are the games that you want to have played more towards the summer months in regards to those stadiums. So I'm right there with you as Jared Smith, who does tremendous work here at VSiN, is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And with regards to what you've seen thus far this season, has there been a team or two that you've been able to find some good data on, whether it be backing them in terms of a year fee, a nerf fee, or is it just in general one of these cases where there's a few teams of mystery? Because I remember last year, the Marlins were certainly your team, and they are very different from a season ago with Aurelio Soler no longer in the fold, and quite frankly, their entire pitching staff being injured.
That's the big reason why. The reason why the Marlins were such a fun bet for us last year to the nerf fee is their offense went through this really bad lull, but they also had this elite pitching staff with Alcantara and even Lizardo and Rogers. I mean, they had, it seemed like every day, and then Yuri Perez, who unfortunately is done for the year, it seemed like every day they had an ace out there and they weren't hitting. It's still too early to designate one of my teams as like, this is going to be our nerfy team or this is going to be our Yuri team this year. I will say this, Colorado is probably my favorite team to bet against. From a nerfy-yurfy perspective, it's bizarre. It's probably the only situation I've seen like this in my 3 years of doing this. They can't score. They really struggle to score. They've scored in one first inning through their first 10 games, but the Yurfy is 7-3 because their pitchers just keep giving up runs. They've given up a run in the first inning 7 out of their 10 games. That is how bad their pitching staff has been early in games this season. So that's an interesting dichotomy where you can find a team that is not giving you a lot of nerfy love, but they're giving up a lot of runs. Well, then again, the derivative market's your friend. You can bet on the team the Rockies play to score a run in the first inning every night at pretty significant plus money, plus 145, plus 150, even at Coors Field, that's around plus 160. So again, look to the derivative markets, look to find different places and unique ways to bet these teams. But there hasn't been that, oh my goodness, I have to bet this every day kind of team arrived just yet.
Yeah, Ben, I do think that that might come later on during the season, and it might be a little bit of a dynamic sort of situation as well. And how much do you take a look with regards to yes run, no run first inning at some of those teams that they might start slow and then pick it up a little bit late with regards to offense, or vice versa? Because we see it every single year where a team might start out strong on offense and then flail down the stretch. Like, I take a look at a team like the San Francisco Giants a season ago. They were actually halfway decent in the first half of the season in generating runs. Couldn't generate anything to save their lives in the second half of the season. And I always do think that there's those intricacies and those dynamics where some teams just start out strong and then they just flail out towards the back half of the season, and you can get some fool's gold when it comes to the early part of the season.
I think there's a lot of that that'll come. I just don't think we're there yet. I really struggle with the first 2 weeks. I think the first 2 weeks is you kind of just throw a bunch of stuff on the wall and see what sticks. You see if you can find a market that you've got a good groove in. You see if you find a team or a situation that you can keep going back to every night and it's like consistent. Like, I know when this guy pitches, I'm betting this. I know when this team plays, I'm betting this. Because baseball to me is so rhythmic and it's such a routine. The first 2 weeks, you have no routine. You're scanning a wide landscape of all these different wagers you can make, and you don't know what's worked for you. It's such a unique sport, unlike any other sport to bet, because of the length of the season. And it makes these first 2 weeks, really, frankly, the first month, you have to really stay disciplined. So I always tell people, if you struggle the first month, don't give up and act like, you know, throw a hissy fit like it's the way the whole season is going to go. The first month of baseball season is weird. The whole sport itself, the season is designed not to matter in April. So don't let it matter for your bankroll.
Yep, absolutely. And it's not like these games don't completely matter at all, but at the same time, you've got so many different data points. You've got 162 games, one or two losses. Well, you're going to get a lot of bites at the apple. And this isn't the NFL where if you have a bad Sunday, you have to stew on it for many days. And If you don't have anything on the Thursday game, you're not going to be able to get back at it until about a week or so. Well, when it comes to Major League Baseball, you have a rough Sunday. You know what? There's plenty of games to be able to bet on Monday. And I do think that that is both encouraging and for some people it can be a little bit rough because when you're in a little bit of a rut, it can seem to just feel never ending. But at the same time, I'm personally someone that does love the day in, day out action that a sport like baseball provides, because if you have a rough day, being able to try to take a look at a team like the Chicago Cubs, for example, momentum's as good as the next day's starter, and being able to just gauge a different starter in general, I think is such a great dynamic that baseball provides that really no other sport does.
It's the most unique sport to bet on every day. I have a new strategy. It's not like a new strategy. It's just, it's a new mental approach this year, Greg. I'm treating every week like it's a season. I'm tracking it like it's a season. I'm doing weekly. This is how I did this week. And then I'm kind of compartmentalizing each season in its own separate week. Now, I've never done it like this before. I've always treated it like monthly, usually April, May, June, July. But I'm trying to take smaller bites this year. And I'm going to try to see how that does to my mental approach, because I do think, to your point, the grind of this takes its toll. And if you're looking at a sheet that says April down 20 units, you're like, man, that's a lot of ground to make up. But if you can reset that and be like, all right, I'm fresh this week. It's a way to just kind of stay mentally fresh. So I'll see if that works. We'll give it a month or two and see if the weeks are just getting a little bit too short. I do like changing up your strategy. I like changing up your approach. I like changing up your mindset, because this is a sport that will wear on you. And you have to figure out new ways and fresh ways to approach it. And it's weird. It's a sport that also relies on a lot of consistency and discipline. But to me, you also have to be willing to adjust and adapt. And those are two very unique skill sets. And the ability to mesh those together, the marathon and the ability to kind of cut fast and move quick, to me, those are two very different ways to look at the betting markets. And it takes a very specific type of guy or girl to be able to handle this over a 6-month stretch.
Yep. And I do feel like the grinders truly get rewarded in baseball, because if you're trying to get rich quick in terms of the game of baseball, that's going to be very much a defeatist effort. This is the ultimate marathon sport, as you were alluding to, as Jared Smith, who does such great work here at VSiN, is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And Jared, I did want to ask you about this as well, because I do think that sometimes taking a look at the futures market in Major League Baseball can be a little bit difficult prior to the season. And I do think that a lot of the opportunities, they come in season, like anyone that bet Blake Snell after like the first month of the season to win Cy Young, you were very, very handsomely paid on that one. But was there anything that you did take a look at prior to the season that did appeal to you, whether that be a player award, whether that be a team to go over under their win total? Was there anything that you fired in on prior to the season?
I actually made a pretty decent amount of preseason wagers. I like the win total markets preseason. That's my preferred bet of choice, because I know during the regular season, I don't bet a lot of sides. So I pick teams that I want to bet on or against, and I kind of treat it as a full season money line bet, you know, where I can follow along these teams all year long and feel comfortable that, you know, I've got good value because I'm betting over, you know, over time instead of just one game. Diamondbacks over 83.5, Reds over 81.5 wins, Brewers under 77.5. That one's not looking great, but I think Milwaukee will slow down. And this is the one that, I mean, let's be honest, guys, Rockies under 6.5 wins. I mean, that felt like taking candy from a baby. I don't know how they get to 61. That means they have to not lose 100. So a really tough ask if they only lost 99 or 100 games this year. I think they're ticketed for 110 losses. Also, Pete Alonso over 41.5 home runs. That was a pretty simple handicap. It was twofold. One, he's in a contract year. The Mets look awful. I don't know if that's going to help or hurt his cause. We'll see how the vibe is for the next month or so with the Mets. But also, he's donating $1,000 to animal shelters, rescue shelters, every time he hits a home run this year. So I love that karma for him. I wanted to get involved and do a little social media awareness for that. So I bet the over 41.5 on his home run total, and then him to lead the league in home runs this year was 12-1. So again, not a massive portfolio pre-flop. I also took a little small piece of the Cardinals to win the Central. I think they were underpriced, but the Brewers obviously starting fast isn't helping that. But I still think Milwaukee will slow down.
Yep, I do think so as well. I think the big question mark for the Milwaukee Brewers is the young bats and the offense. If guys like Bryce Harang and company can keep this up, that is going to be a dangerous team. But I would say it's less likely than more than likely that they are going to be able to do so. So I'm right there with you. And I do think that that Central is going to be wide open. And Jared, just in terms of the slate that we have for Tuesday, it's a pretty expansive one. We've got all 30 teams that are going to be in action. Is there anything that you are going to be taking a look at, fully recognizing that We're doing this while the yes run, no run first inning props are not up yet. Typically, strikeout props, they don't get hung until very, very late overnight as well, things like that. But anything that you have your eye on for Tuesday?
Burns on the mound for the Orioles. That'll be always interesting. This Detroit-Pittsburgh series is unique, too. Both of these teams have kind of captured the hearts and minds of the baseball world the first couple of weeks, especially the Pirates, who are actually the most profitable team in baseball on the money line through the first 10 games of the season. Don't know how I feel about Martin Perez, but Casey Mize has an ERA over 6, so maybe Pittsburgh stays hot. And I'm always interested in the Phillies. I think they're a team, especially when Wheeler's on the mound, you know, he's got a minuscule ERA. I think that could be a Cy Young kind of vibe for him this year if he can continue to stay on this run. High on the Cardinals this year, so I think that's a series in St. Louis that catches my attention as well. And I think the Rangers and the Astros have just played a ridiculous marathon series. That wraps up tonight. I think that ends tonight, but then Houston goes to Kansas City, who, you know, is another interesting young team, and you get some youth that start the year hot, and you see if some of these young teams like Pittsburgh and Kansas City and Cincinnati also above 500, you know, we don't expect those teams to win 890 games and win their divisions, but I do think it's always interesting when new, fresh blood starts to come to the forefront and when they get a chance to face the Brewers and the Astros and teams that are, you know, the tops of their divisions most years. So keep an eye on those young, hungry teams throughout the first few weeks. The markets tend to be a little slow to catch up.
Yep, I do think so as well. And when it comes to young, hungry teams, we have seen quite a few be able to rise up and have a nice start to the season. And a man that is always hungry, a man that is always doing a tremendous job, taking a look at so many different things. That'd be you, Jared. You do such an amazing job taking a look at this great game of baseball. You did incredible work on the college basketball front. I know you're getting set for what is going to be a tremendous football season as well with the NFL draft. So love to get people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. Fox Sports Radio every Saturday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific. We have transitioned to basketball, do some baseball, but we'll get back into football vibes once we get to the June, July, August, summer months. And in Live on the Line is every weekday. I'm doing a lot of fill-in work for them. Danny Kleppinger, who does fantastic work, is in Monaco right now covering the Masters for tennis. I'll be filling in with them pretty much the entire month of April and most of May. You can watch that, of course, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, a bunch of different platforms, Stadium, Bally Sports, Marquee, Yes Network, if you're on the East Coast there in New York City. So lots of different ways to catch me. And then, of course, every Saturday night with Ben Wilson on Visa, doing a Live Bet Saturday, our four-hour sprint through the betting world. So Saturdays are busy for me this summer, Greg, but as you know, my friend, I would not have it any other way.
Absolutely. Jared is a busy man, a hardworking man, and a guy that always brings it on this podcast. Every single time he joins me, I feel like we get just a little bit smarter. So big thanks to Jared for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this baseball Tuesday as we touch them all.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always great to be able to get Jared Smith aboard. He does tremendous work here at the network. The show live on the line is absolutely sensational. He does great work taking a look at everything with regards to college football, when it comes to Fox Sports Radio, when it comes to in-season there. He's our main Yerfy-Nerfy guy here at VSiN, and every single time he joins the show, always lends great insight. So, big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Tuesday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at GNNR41. We are going to be going in the Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, and any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So, how about if we get things started with 901, 902 on the betting board? The Milwaukee Brewers hit the road. They're facing off against the Cincinnati Reds. Yes, we are on to Cincinnati, and they're on to one Frankie Montas getting the start for them, and Joe Ross goes for the Brewers, and the Brewers do find themselves as underdogs of between plus 130 and plus 135, minus 145 to minus 155, that number on Cincinnati. 9.5 is the total. Under is between minus 110 to a minus 120. Over is between even a minus 110, and it's a circumstance where I set the Reds at a minus 146. I needed at least a plus 135 to take a run line of minus 1.5. Right now, seeing that at a plus 130, so it's a little bit chalkier, but I'm going to stick with the money line. Frankie Montas has just been injured the last few seasons, and I've liked what I've seen out of him in his first few starts. This is a little bit more of a hitter's ballpark, but you do have a Milwaukee Brewers team that, despite the fact that they had that outburst on Sunday, despite the fact that you do have quite a few guys that have started out the year quite hot, still do have my question marks with some of these younger guys. Jackson Chourio does look like he's going to be the real deal, but Bryce Terang, Blake Perkins. These are guys that I do have question marks about. Selfie, like, looks like he's picking up a little bit. And Christian Yelich, Willy Adames in the middle of the lineup. They look to have returned to form. Yelich had a little bit of a return last season, and looks like he's fully back this season. Meanwhile, for Cincinnati, you do have a few question marks with regards to consistency of all these players at the plate as well. Elly De La Cruz, he's able to make the amazing play, but is he going to be able to make the routine play? Christian Encarnacion Strand, Jameer Candelario, these guys are both posting up a sub-300 on base, but you've had Nick Martini be able to supply a few home runs. Stuart Fairchild at the top of the lineup has been relatively solid, and both of these teams have some pretty formidable bullpens. The bullpen advantage is going to be going to the Milwaukee Brewers, as you've got Elvis Piguero, Joel Piamps. They're very good in the middle of the bullpen. Ebner Uribe could sometimes be a little bit wild, but he's got really good stuff. But the question mark is Joe Ross, because I was talking about the injuries to Frankie Montas over the last few seasons. Joe Ross hadn't really pitched at the big league level since 2021, prior to his first start of the season against the Twins, where he only went 3 2/3 innings and walked 5. So I've got massive question marks there in terms of command. He's always been an okay pitcher at the big league level. Nothing great, nothing terrible, nothing that'll blow you away, but a little bit off-putting what we saw in that first start. And for the Cincinnati Reds, this is a lineup that honestly didn't hit as great as you'd expect them to at home a season ago, so it does make it interesting with regards to the total, just because it is still a little bit colder out there in Cincinnati this time of year, despite the fact that it is a little bit of a bandbox of a ballpark, but much so more towards the summer months rather than right now. And for the Reds, it's not an amazing bullpen, but I have quite a few guys I like. Brent Suter was very good when he was with the Colorado Rockies last season, but had to throw some long relief over the weekend. Fernando Cruz had a sub-2 ERA about two seasons ago. Buck Farmer is someone that's able to get the job done along with Lucas Sims. When you have TJ Antone sell, but he's injured once again, as he always is, but Alexis Diaz, one of the better closers that you're going to find out there in the big leagues. Did something total 9.4. I think that Ross is going to get lit up a little bit, but the bullpen is going to be able to help stabilize things, and I do think that the Reds find a way to be able to get the job done at home. Going to be looking at the under on 9.5, and willing to lay up to minus 145 on this Reds money line. 903-904 on the betting board. It's the New York Mets. They're facing off against the Atlanta Braves. Reynaldo Lopez goes for the Braves, and Adrian Oncombe, Doogie Howser is on the bump for the Mets. Mets are an underdog of anywhere between plus 160 and plus 170. Meanwhile, anywhere between minus 184 to minus 192 is your number on the Bravos. 10 is the total. The under is between minus 115 to a minus 125. Over is anywhere between minus 105 to a plus 105. And we're going to be going with the under in this spot. I did set my total at a 9.8. And when it comes to this Atlanta Braves team, they've got no shortage of firepower. You just take a look at them 1 through 9. Every one of these guys is a really good professional hitter, perhaps aside from Chadwick Trump on the few days that you get him out there. But all in all, this is a very fearsome lineup. But I actually liked what I saw of Reynaldo Lopez in his last start. He was able to go out there through 5 relatively solid innings, and the White Sox just had no idea how to utilize him. It's a White Sox team that is just out of sorts in general, and it looks like you might have a little bit of something here with Reynaldo Lopez, who throughout his career has always been a right around 9 strikeout per 9 inning guy for Adrian Houser. He did also work on being able to control the walks last season with the Milwaukee Brewers. He was pretty miserable during the 2021-22 seasons, giving out 4 walks per 9 innings, more like 2.7 walks per 9 innings last season. That's big, because he's more of a pitcher contact guy. Last year got a little bit over 7 punchouts per 9 innings. So he's had a little bit more struggles on the road rather than at home, but first start of the season for him, he's able to go out there, goes 5 innings, allows just 1 run, so that was a good start for him. And you do have a Mets lineup that certainly was able to wake up yesterday, but it has been a Mets lineup that in general has been off to a rough start to the season. You've got Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, TJ Turnitup, Stewart, Jeff McNeil, all hitting a .167 or lower, and they should be able to pick it up a little bit, but Lindor just has not really worked out in New York, to say the least. It's been Brett Batty, Francisco Alvarez, who have been the two guys that have really been carrying the team. Now, Brandon Nimmo was able to get a 2 home run game yesterday, and that's absolutely big for him, but all in all, I do think that these struggles are going to continue against an Atlanta Braves bullpen that is one of the best out there in the big leagues. They now have Tyler Mancek back in the fold after he was missing all of last season. Has been a little bit of a touch-and-go situation with the likes of Pierce Johnson, A.J. Minter to begin the season, but I think that they're going to fortify themselves. You still have Rossy Iglesias back there, and then with the Atlanta Braves, you know that Ronald Acuna Jr. has had a little bit of a rough start to the season. He's going to pick it up. Travis Darnot has been quite impressive throughout his career. He's having a little bit of a rough go of it to begin the season, but Orlando Orlando Arcia, Jarrett Kelnick at the bottom of the fold, maybe they'll be able to give you good production. And I do think that the Atlanta Braves are going to take it to a Mets unit that, even though they were able to pick it up with regards to their lineup yesterday, I still have massive question marks with them. They had scored 3 runs or fewer in regulation, non-extras, in all but 3 of their games as far this season. So I'm going to be looking at the under semi-total 9.8. And with the Braves, I set them at a minus 112 on the run line. Right now, we're finding that more in the neighborhood about even money, plus 105. I'm going to be willing to take that Braves run line with the just firepower that they've got on offense to go along with the under. 9-5, 9-6 is the DK Network write-up pick, as you've got the Philadelphia Phillies on the road taking on the St. Louis Cardinals, as Sonny Gray goes for the Cardinals, and Zach Wheelan and Dylan Wheeler is on the bump for the Phillies. Phillies are in between minus 123 to minus 130 favorites. Between plus 110 to plus 116 is your number on St. Louis. 7.5 is the total. Under is between minus 115 to a minus 120. The over is between even and minus 105. And right up here is going to be on the over. I set my total more around an 8.2. With Sonny Gray, he's going to be making his first start of the season after beginning the year on the injured list. And gotta feel like he's going to be on a little bit of a limited pitch count, and they're going to be utilizing kids' gloves with him, as he was the big offseason acquisition for St. Louis last season when he was with the Minnesota Twins. Led the American League in both fielding independent and fewest home runs per 9 innings among qualifying starters, with right around about a 280 fielding independent, 0.4 home runs surrendered per 9 innings, and in his 32 starts, gave up 3 runs or fewer in all but 3 of them. But even if he goes like 5 innings, gives up 2 or 3 runs, he is backed up by a bullpen for the Cardinals that, for one, had to take part in an extra inning game yesterday. So both of these bullpens a little bit more tired than normal. And for two, they return one reliever from last year that had a ERA better than a 3.5. That'd be Ryan Helsley. Past that, you've got guys like Giovanni Gallegos, Ryan Fernandez, Jojo Romero, Andre Pallante, guys that you really don't trust in. And entering into the day yesterday, the Philadelphia Phillies bullpen was posting up an ERA right around about a 5.61 for this season. As I've just noticed this with the Philadelphia Phillies, year in and year out, it always feels like the bullpen has their struggles to begin the season. Cerathe Dominguez, Jose Alvarado, they've had a pretty miserable start to the campaign. You've got in some relatively good innings out of Jeff Hoffman and Junior Marte, but you've got rolls of the dice with guys like Matt Strom and company. And for the Phillies, Zach Wheeler has had a relatively solid start to the season. He's given up just 1 earned run over the course of 12 innings, 2 unearned runs to go along with that as well. But throughout his career, he's had his struggles in the months of March and April. It's the only month in general that he has an ERA north of 4 for his career. And I do think that he's going to struggle with a St. Louis Cardinals lineup that has a pair of guys, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, that have gotten off to some touch-and-go starts of the season. Arenado, he's been able to get on base in terms of generating hits, but not really moving the line in terms of walks. Both of these guys have a combined 1 home run, but I do think that they are going to be able to pick it up. You know that they're going to be able to pick it up, in my opinion. And then Brandon Donovan has some of the more demonstrative home and road splits in terms of getting on base in all baseball. Nolan Gorman is able to supply some boom. He's been able to give the team a pair of home runs. You've even been able to get the catcher spot going as well. Wilson Contreras, Ivan Herrera, combined 4 home runs between those two. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, they were 8th in the league last season in terms of total runs scored, 6th after the All-Star break. You've had a few guys struggle to begin the season for this team, as Nick Castellanos has not been able to get out of neutral. You've got Johan Rojas, who is clearly out there for his glove and not his bat, but JT Realmuto sitting at 300. He's been able to supply a pair of home runs. Bryce Harper stands at 3 home run game. Has not really gotten it going. I do think that he's going to be a bit more consistent in general. Alec Bohm, guys like this, you do need them to get it going a tad bit more, but I do think that they're going to be able to do so. I think that even though you've got 2 top-flight pitchers out there in Gray and Wheeler, that both of these offense do get cooking, and I do think that the extra innings yesterday certainly does help with the bullpens being tired. So, did set my total on an 8.2. My write-up is on the over, and I set the Cardinals as a very slight favorite. With the Phillies, I just don't trust in this bullpen right now, so I'm going to be looking at the money line of St. Louis, and my write-up is going to be on the over. 9-7, 9-8 on the betting board. The Colorado Rockies playoffs, the Arizona Diamondbacks. Merrill Kelly goes for the Snakes, and Cal Quantrill is on the bump for Colorado, and Colorado is a sizable underdog, anywhere between plus 160 and plus 167. Between minus 180 to minus 195 is that number on Arizona. The last game is 11. The over is between minus 110 to a minus 125. The under is anywhere between minus 110 to a plus 105. And if you're looking at the Diamondbacks run line, anywhere between minus 123 to minus 130 is what you're going to be laying there. I'm willing to go up to a minus 125 on this Arizona Diamondbacks run line. Wouldn't want to lay anything more than a minus 125, but going to be willing to lay it. The Diamondbacks were gotten yesterday by the Colorado Rockies. I don't think that that's going to be happening too much moving forward. And hey, to the Rockies' credit, they've been able to win two out of the five games that they played against Arizona thus far this season. But with the Colorado Rockies, you just have a very unreliable bullpen, to say the least, with this unit. Now, granted, a lot of the runs that they gave up, both with regards to starter Kyle Freeland along the bullpen, quite a few of those were off of the errors that we saw yesterday. But that said, you just take a look at this Rockies bullpen, and Victor Vodnik is right now one of your most trustworthy guys. You're looking at guys like Nick Mears, Jalen Beeks, Jake Bird coming out of the bullpen, and that's an issue. And you do have an Arizona Diamondbacks team as well that is not too trustworthy in the bullpen, which is why I'm going to be taking a look at the over. I set my total at 12.3. We saw Luis Frias have an issue yesterday. Miguel Castro, not someone that you can necessarily trust. And I actually like their long guy in Bryce Jarvis. Kevin Ginkle is relatively okay, but Joe Mantiplies went down the toilet bowl as well. But this is a Diamondbacks unit that currently ranks in the top five of the big leagues in terms of runs per game. You've got the top of the fold really doing a nice job. 1-5 in their lineup yesterday, all giving at least a 340 on base. And as a matter of fact, when you look at the guys that were in the lineup and gave you at least one at-bat yesterday, you had pretty much all but, I believe, two of the guys that saw an at-bat yesterday giving you at least a 340 on base. So these guys are doing a nice job being able to move the line. Christian Walker already has three home runs this far this season. Corbin Carroll's gotten off to a little bit of a rough start, but he had a pair of hits yesterday. You know that he's going to be fine. Ketel Marte, he's been able to provide three home runs, so it has been a Marte parte. Meanwhile, for the Colorado Rockies, they just hit so differently away from home rather than at home. They only averaged about 3.65 runs per game away from home last season, 5.35 at home. Their batting average at home last season, more than 35 points higher than it was away from home. And you've got Ryan McMahon, a north of a 400 this far this season. He has been tremendous. You've got Charlie Blackman, who moves the line. He was able to get a home run yesterday. Hasn't been providing a lot of pop, though, but he's been able to find a way on base. You've got a few guys that they just really need to pick it up. Ilyarius Montero, Brandon Rogers, throwing there Chris Bryant. All these guys hanging below the middle line of 200, and Bryant is just looking like a big, giant waste of money. But Brenton Doyle at the bottom fold has been a nice find as well. And for Merrill Kelly, he has a ERA that's about a full point higher away from home rather than at home for his career, but was a much better road pitcher last season. I do think that he has done a nice job of being able to work on that split. He's given up 3 runs in 13 2/3 innings thus far this season. First start against the Colorado Rockies, punched out 8, gave up 1 run in 6 2/3 innings, but now he's up at Coors. But so is Cal Quantrill, a pitch of contact guy who, yeah, I don't think that this is going to be necessarily the world's greatest fit for him. Last season, he was only getting right around 6 strikeouts per 9 innings. Always has relatively solid command, but in this sort of a ballpark, I think that Cal Quantrill is going to get eaten alive by these Diamondbacks bats. So it is a circumstance where I did set my total at 12.3. I do like the over. And with the Diamondbacks, I'm going to be willing to ride with them, laying a run F up to a minus 125. 9-9, 9-10 on the betting board. The Washington Nationals on the road. They're facing off against the San Francisco Giants. Kyle Harrison is on the bump for the Giants, and Josiah Gray goes for the Nationals. Nationals are an underdog of between plus 145 to plus 150. Meanwhile, minus 160 to minus 175 is that number on San Francisco. 8-8.5 is the total on the 8.5. Under is between minus 115 to a minus 120. The over is between minus 105 to a even money price. And on the 8, over is minus 120. Under is even. You're going to be getting a plus 125 to a plus 130 on the Giants, laying a run and a half, and that's what I'm going to be looking at. Was want to take anything of a plus 120 or higher to lay a run and a half. Set my money line more around a minus 169. I'd rather have the run line in this ordeal. Now, Josiah Gray, very different in the way that he pitches when he's away from home rather than when he's at home. Actually had a sub-3 ERA away from home a season ago. 5.48 ERA at home. I have no idea how he's got such a demonstrative split, because Washington isn't necessarily the worst pitcher's ballpark out there in the world, but he just gives up a lot of walks in general. We've seen that in his first two starts of the season, 5 walks given up in 8 2/3 innings. The hard contact certainly has been there over the last 2 seasons, giving up north of a home run and a half per 9 innings. Now, he's backed up by a Washington Nationals lineup that has fortified itself a little bit in the offseason. They do add some power with the likes of Jesse Winker, Joey Gallo, Eddie Rosario, all guys that have provided at least 25 home runs in a season in their lives. And you do need some of your returning pieces like Keibert Ruiz, Joey Meneses to be able to pick it up a little bit. But this was a bunch that did a nice job being able to move the line a season ago, and they go up against the San Francisco Giants unit that has done a nice job bringing in talent to be able to fortify this line. Matt Chapman has had a rough start to the season, hitting below the Mendoza line of a 200, or a Solaire has been a little bit up and down as well, but I do anticipate a very nice year for him as well. Entered into yesterday with a pair of home runs for the Giants. They did not get what they were looking for out of Blake Snell yesterday, so I do think that that is going to allow for a little bit more in terms of the game getting a bit harebrained towards back off of it, as for the San Francisco Giants, they did have to utilize a lot of their longer relievers. But for Kyle Harrison, I think that he can go out there, give you a nice start. He's got really good start stuff in general. He, in his two starts, has given up 6 runs in 11 innings, but 4 of those runs came against the LA Dodgers. And when you face off against the LA Dodgers on the road, you know that it's going to be a little bit of a rough go of it for you. But I do think that he's going to do a nice job being able to get some nice strikeouts, help out a bullpen that is going to have Rogers squared, relatively good to go in this one. Tyler and Taylor Rogers. Ryan Walker has been relatively solid as a long guy. He didn't really get used up yesterday as well. And for the Washington Nationals, Hunter Harvey has been solid out there in the bullpen. I cannot agree with them putting Kyle Finnegan in the closer spot, as he has been an issue for the team the last few seasons. But Jordan Weems, Jarek Law, these are guys that are relatively solid. And for the San Francisco Giants, I do think that guys like Jungle Lee are going to be able to fortify themselves, as you still have the likes of Therio Estrada, Mike Yastrzemski, Wilmer Flores, guys that last season did a solid job getting on base. Now guys are going to give you like 15 to 20 home runs throughout the season. I do think that the Giants are going to be able to get to the Nationals in this ordeal. I'm going to be willing to lay the run line. I'm going to take a plus 120 or higher on the Giants. And did set my total at an 8.4. Personally, I would rather have the 8 over rather than the 8.5 under, especially with a entire Giants bullpen. So looking at the over and that Giants run line. 9-11, 9-12 on the betting board. It is the Chicago Cubs on the road facing off against the San Diego Padres. Joe Musgrove is on the bump for the Pods, and it is old to be determined who's going to be on the bump for the Cubs. So this is a game that's presently off the board. Right now, we're looking through the grapevine as who might be getting the start. I'm thinking that you're probably going to have just some sort of a bullpen game here for the Cubs. I officially listed Drew Smyly as a starter. That was the listed starter up on FanGraphs. And if that is the case, and you like the bullpen, Drew Smyly, just a poo-poo board of pitchers in general, I set the Padres at a minus 168. We'll be willing to take a run line at a plus 118 or higher, laying a run F, and then 8 or less looking at the over, 8.5 or higher, the under for Joe Musgrove. I think that he's going to be able to do his part in this win, and even though he got lit up in his first go around the season when he went up against the LA Dodgers, gave up 5 runs in 2 3/3 innings, has looked quite well ever since then. Last start against the St. Louis Cardinals, punches out 7, gives up 1 run over the course of 6 innings, and if you do indeed give Drew Smyly the start in this one for the Cubs, it's not like he's foreign to making starts. He's someone that was a starter for much of the season last year before he got demoted to the bullpen. He's been utilized as a long guy recently, last pitch on Friday for 2 2/3 innings, so I could see him being like a 3-inning guy, and then from there, you just look to a few guys like a Ben Brown, perhaps Yancy Almonte to be able to hold down the fort. Perhaps you utilize Luke Little, who I believe was a starter at the minor league level as well. And for the Cubs, it's not a great bullpen. It's not a bad bullpen. Jose Quas has been relatively solid for the team, but for the San Diego Padres, I do think that they're going to be able to get to the pitching, as Jake Cronenworth has done a nice job of being able to get on base as far as the season, north of a 350 on base going into yesterday. Luis Campusano doesn't really take his base, but he's done a nice job putting bat to ball. He's already got a home run with a 350 average going into yesterday. Xander Bogaerts has been a little bit up and down since joining the Padres, but with he, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr. in the middle of the lineup, you gotta like what they're providing there. And for Machado and Tatis, a combined 5 home runs going into yesterday as well. Meanwhile, for the Chicago Cubs, you just have a lot of balance in general with this team. For the Chicago Cubs, you have to love what Cody Bellinger has been able to do the last few seasons after it looked like his career might be on the fritz with the LA Dodgers. He's already got 10-plus RBI this far as the season. Then you have the likes of C.A. Suzuki, Christopher Morel, Ian App, Dansby Swanson. All these guys are hitting north of a 290. All these guys anticipate being able to give you 20-plus home runs this season. Nico Horner has had a little bit of a tough time getting on base, but you know that that's going to come around for him. So I do think that for the Padres, they should be a pretty good-sized favorite. I do think that after both teams were able to hang north of a touchdown on the board yesterday, things are going to be a little bit more calm in this game, as it is still a start out there in Petco Park, one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks in the big league. So 8 or less looking at the over, 8.5 or higher, the under, and for the Padres, them at a minus 168 on the money line, would be willing to take plus 117 or higher, laying a run half. 913, 914 on the betting board. It is the Baltimore Orioles on the road facing off against the Boston Red Sox. Brian Baio is on the bump for Boston, and one Mr. Corbin Burns is on the bump for Baltimore. Baltimore is a favorite of varying between minus 128 to minus 135, and you're going to be getting between plus 110 to plus 121 on the Boston Red Sox. In FZ total, under is between minus 105 to minus 115, and same goes for the over. With the Orioles, I did set them as a favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay. Set that at a minus 131. So seeing the minus 128s out there, wouldn't want to go past a minus 130, but here at a minus 128, that is my buy point. Really like Brian Bello as a pitcher. I think that he's one of the more underrated guys out there in the big leagues. And I think that he's doing for a good year, but you can tell that his stuff doesn't necessarily play the most favorably to Fenway. Good news is it's relatively cold out there in the northeast part of the country, so that's going to be able to help out. Knock down some of those balls that might be flying out during the summertime. He's got a really good changeup, but sometimes can get tattooed a little bit, as we did see that in his start against the Oakland A's. Gave up 4 runs over the course of 5 innings, including a pair of home runs, so that's a little bit concerning, but has done a really nice job being able to work on command. Not a high swing and miss guy, but just watching him in the spring this offseason, I do think that he is going to be able to improve upon the right around about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings that he was able to get a season ago. He just doesn't quite compare to Corbin Burns, though, and if we're being frank, probably got a little bit fortunate last season for Bayo. 4.54 fielding independent a season ago compared to a 4.24 ERA. Meanwhile, for Corbin Burns, throughout his career, he's always pitched better away from home rather than at home. His stuff just didn't really play well to Milwaukee and what was once known as Miller Park, but I mean, he's done a really nice job be able to dial things in. Last year was actually the whip leader in terms of qualifying starters out there in the National League, and first two starts with the Baltimore Orioles, relatively solid. 3 runs surrendered in 10 2/3 innings, did allow a home run to Mike Trout, but you know what? Lots of guys are going to be allowing a home run to Mike Trout, but you just go back to 2023 and what he was able to do in starts away from home. 2.77 ERA compared to a 4.28 ERA when he was in Milwaukee, so he's going to be comfortable in the setup. And he goes up against a Red Sox lineup that it feels like they're a little bit all or nothing. You've got to love what Tyler O'Neill has been able to provide for the team. I'm not sure why the Cardinals gave up on him, but 5 home runs this far this season. He has been absolutely incredible. You've got Rafael Devers, who's off to a little bit of a slow start to the season with the batting average, but still a 342 on base, pair of home runs for him. The question is, can these young guys like Tristan Casas, Jaron Duran, Emmanuel Valdez, that had success last season, be able to pick it up? Duran is hitting well above a 350. Other two gentlemen, they're below a 330 in terms of their on base, and you got Masataka Yoshida, who hasn't provided a lot of power, but has been able to move the line for the Red Sox since being acquired, and for the Baltimore Orioles. You've got just a very well-rounded and deep lineup. You've got guys that you're able to platoon against righties and lefties, so that's a big advantage for the team. Jordan Westberg is someone who is up and coming, has had a little bit of a rough start to the season, but I think that he's going to be able to pick it up. But you've got Gunnar Henderson, Cedric Mullins, Anthony Santander, who have all been able to supply multiple home runs this season. Now, all three of these guys need to pick up their average. They're all below a 300 with regards to their on base, all below 225 in terms of their overall average, but Adley Rutschman, Ryan Mountcastle are doing a good job being able to move the line. Ryan O'Hearn, one of the more underrated hitters in this lineup. Personally, I think that he's good enough to be an everyday guy, and I do like this Orioles bullpen a little bit more than that of Boston's. Boston does have, in the 8th and 9th inning, Chris Martin along with Kenley Jansen, and Jansen, when it's not a big-time game, typically comes through for you. Now, everyone else is a little bit of a roll of the dice. Josh Winkowski can be a relatively solid long guy, but when you get into more of the less than trustworthy guys, that could be an issue. Meanwhile, for the Orioles, you just have to avoid Craig Kimbrel. I wish I could put it any other way, but that guy is absolutely terrible. That said, you've got the likes of Danny Colbom, Yunir Cano, Jacob Webb, Dylan Tate. These are all relatively solid options for the Baltimore Orioles. I do think that Corbin Burns is going to be able to go out there, turn a nice start, and I do think that this is going to be a game where both of these guys are going to give up a little bit just because it is Fenway Park. I set my total at 8.6, so you're at the 8.5. I'm going to be looking at the over, but with Baltimore, we'll lay up to a minus 130 on this money line. 950, 916 on the betting board. The Cleveland Guardians play us to the Chicago White Sox. Mike Soroka is on the bump for the Sox, and Logan Allen goes for Cleveland. And Cleveland, anywhere between minus $2 to minus $2.25 favorites. Anywhere between plus $180 to plus $190. That number on the White Sox, in half is the total. Over and under, anywhere between minus $105 to a minus $115. And if you are looking at the run line of the Cleveland Guardians, I'd be willing to go up to about a minus $110 or so there. And right now we're finding that at a pretty favorable price, in my opinion. You're getting that right around even money. I'm going to be willing to take that even money run line for the Chicago White Sox. This is just a rudderless ship at this point, because you've got a guy that I like in Luis Robert is able to provide a little bit of power, but absolutely no plate discipline with darn near anyone other than Andrew Vaughn, who's having a relatively rough start to the season. You've got a bullpen that is just cataclysmically bad when you're looking at guys like Dominic Leon, along with Tim Hill. Davey Garcia is your main bullpen piece, is That's not necessarily too tremendous. And for the Chicago White Sox, they just can't really generate any runs because they don't necessarily have a lot of power. Paul DeJong is hitting .150 with two home runs. He's right now leading the way for the team. Moncada may be able to move the line a little bit, but now they're dealing with an injury to Eloy Jimenez. I believe that Luis Robert might be out of the fold as well. I think that he got injured a day or two ago as well. So, I mean, you just have a myriad of different injuries for this team, and it is just horrible. Meanwhile, for Logan Allen, he should be able to go out there and really be able to lock down these guys. For Logan Allen, had a relatively nice year number one with the Cleveland Guardians. It's easy to go, posting up a 381 ERA. Strikeout numbers are there, nearly 9 punchouts for 9 innings. He gave up a little bit too much with regards to walks, but clearly is a bit more comfortable in Cleveland rather than away from home. And for the Guardians, this team is not going to be blowing you away with the amount of home runs that they hit or anything like that. Jose Ramirez has been able to hit a pair of bombs as far this season, but they've got a lot of guys that they just find a way to be able to move the line. Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan, Will Brannon, and Brian Rocchio. These are all guys that are hitting at least a 260 for you. I do think that you're going to be able to get quite a bit moving forward out of Josh Naylor, who he's hitting a 300. Not necessarily the world's greatest power bat, but he's able to supply some power. And for the Guardians, they're dealing with an injury right now to James Karinchak in the bullpen, but still have Emmanuel Class A, who's able to close things out in the ninth inning. Hunter Gaddis has had a nice second act as a bit of a reliever. They pick up Scott Barlow in the offseason, so I do like where this bullpen is at. Do not like the fact that they lose Angel De Los Santos in the offseason, but I do think that they're going to be able to get to Mike Soroka, who's been okay with the Chicago White Sox as far. Gave up 2 runs in his last start against the Kansas City Royals. Swing and miss stuff just clearly is not there. 2 strikeouts and 2 starts. That needs to be a little bit better, but the command has been relatively solid, giving up just 3 walks in this time span. But with Cleveland being a relative just move the line, sort of station to station sort of team, I do think that this is going to be a bit of a death by a million cuts game, and I just have no faith in this White Sox lineup. Now that they've got Eloy Jimenez along with Luis Robert out of the fold, you just have nobody else that's able to hit for this team. So it is a circumstance where I did set my total at 8.1. I'm going to be looking at the under on 8.5 as I don't think the White Sox do their part, and willing to take the run line of the Guardians will be willing to lay up to about a -107 there. 9.17, 9.18 on the betting board. The Toronto Blue Jays, they play the Seattle Mariners. George Kirby goes for the Mariners, and Chris Bassett is the hook, line, and sinker for the Jays. The Blue Jays are very slight favorites, any between -109 to -115. Between -105 to +102 is a number on Seattle. 8 is the total. Under is between -110 to a -120. The over is between even money and -110. Did sell my total at 8.3. I'm going to be looking at the over. Now, with Chris Bassett, ever since he has joined the Toronto Blue Jays, so much better at home rather than away from home. His ERA is more than 1.5 lower when he is at home rather than away from home. And he gives up just in general a little bit less hard contact. I do think that that's going to be very beneficial. I do think that the Blue Jays coming home, that's going to be able to help out their overall offensive numbers. As going into the series, they had scored 3 runs or fewer in 7 out of their last 9 games. They wake up yesterday with being able to put 5 runs up on the board. And for the Blue Jays, it has been a miserable start for them on offense. But you have to feel like these guys are going to be able to pick it up. Now, have we overrated some of these young prospects like Boba Shedd, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Alejandro Kirk? Sure, but these guys are all hitting below 220 right now. I do think that they're better than what they are showing. Kevon Biggio has had a little bit of resurgence this year after he was rough last season, providing north of a 360 on base. Justin Turner has been good in the middle of the lineup. He's been able to give you north of a 400 on base. And George Springer, currently not inning for average, but he's given the team a pair of home runs as well. And then for Seattle, they've had a miserable start to the season at the plate as well. Their top 6 hitters in the lineup yesterday, only one of them hitting above a .207, that'd be Mitch Haniger. Whenever he puts on a Seattle Mariners uniform, as that's once every 2 years, he's been relatively solid. But Julio Rodriguez, Jorge Polanco, J.P. Crawford, Dominic Canzone, these guys are all having a rough start to the season. Canzone has been able to provide a pair of home runs. And for Seattle, they do have some functional power. Mitch Garver, Cal Raleigh, these guys are able to provide a little bit of that. And for Seattle, they just do a nice job in general of being able to cobble up this bullpen. They are dealing with a few guys that are currently out of the fold, like Gregory Santos, who comes over from the Chicago White Sox. He's dealing with an injury along with Matt Brash, but I do like what I'm seeing out of these guys like Trent Thornton, Taylor Cicado. You've obviously got Andres Munoz in the back half. And then for the Toronto Blue Jays, having Eric Swanson, Jordan Romano being out of the fold, that does hurt them quite a bit as well. But Tim Mesa, he was very good for the CMAC ago. Yimi Garcia was a little bit up and down, but I think that he's going to be able to lock in and find it a little bit more as well. So it's an interesting circumstance with Chris Bassett I've always been hesitant to back him. His walks per nine rate last year was right around about 3, and then you've got George Kirby, who's been all about command. Last year, about 1.1 walks per nine innings, but when he gets hit hard. You saw that in the first two starts of the season. First start, relatively solid go of it against the Boston Red Sox. 6 2/3 innings scoreless, and then the Cleveland Guardians forced him to cough up 8 runs, 6 of which were earned over the course of his 3 2/3 innings in that start as well. He gives up a little bit over a home run per nine innings. So you can tell that when he's away from home, his numbers do shoot up just a little bit more rather than when he is at home. So I did set my total at 8.3. Even though Kirby is accurate, he does get hit around quite a bit and isn't necessarily the world's greatest swing and miss guy. So I do like the over. And for the Blue Jays, I did set them at a minus 108 on the money line. I'm seeing one straight minus 108 out there. Would like to see this perhaps trickle down a little bit more to more like a minus 105 or so. But at current numbers, we'll be looking at a minus 108 or better with the Toronto Blue Jays. And looking at this 8 over. 919, 920 on the betting board. The Kansas City Royals, they do play host to the Houston Astros. Christian Javier is on the bump for the Astros. And Cole Reagans is on the bump for Kansas City. Kansas City is an underdog anywhere between plus 105 to plus 110. Meanwhile, minus 116, minus 125, that number on Houston with the total 8.5. Overs between minus 110 to a minus 115, minus 105 to minus 110 is that juice on the under. And set the Astros at a minus 112 on the money line. Would need at least a plus 112 to be able to take a shot on Kansas City. And we've seen this number shoot up quite a bit. Royals open up between even money and plus 105 on the money line. If we could just get this up about 2 to 3 cents, I would be willing to take a shot there. And if all else fails, if you're able to get a halfway decent run and half run line price, right now you're laying minus 150. You would need it to be a little bit lower. But if this goes down to perhaps like a minus 140 or so, I'd be willing to entertain that, as well as I was willing to go up to about a minus 155 in terms of getting a run and half with Cole Reagans. Right now that plus run and a half is what's calling my name. The minus 1.5. You're only getting plus 130 on the Astros with that. Just no value to me in this spot, because I do think that for the Royals, are going to have a little bit of a tough time hitting. Christian Javier, who was terrible towards back half of the season last year. Like, last 18 starts, he was posting up an ERA north of 5, but he has had a real resurgence this season. First two starts has not allowed a single run now. Has gotten out of some sticky spots, 6 walks surrendered in 11 innings, but it appears as though his swing and miss stuff is starting to return. Meanwhile, Cole Reagans has been filthy. 16 strikeouts in 12 and a third innings in his two starts, has allowed just one run. Problem is, he's backed up by a bullpen that is just absolutely terrible. You've got James MacArthur, who's right now one of your main long relievers, and it's not a place where you want to be. You've got guys like Chris Stratton and Will Smith trying to be some of your more trustworthy relievers. And for the Houston Astros, they have taken a little bit of a hit in terms of some of their bullpen depth. Guys like Ryan Sanek, Hector Neris that were there a season ago, they're not there in the fold anymore. But I do think that Josh Hader, after a little bit of a rough start to the season, he's going to be able to pick it up. You've got Ryan Presley, who I do like. And you've got a lineup that I do think that is going to round into form as the season goes along. I have a little bit more faith in their lineup rather than that of the Kansas City Royals. They busted out for 10 runs yesterday. And you've got Yordan Alvarez now firing all cylinders. He had a home run in the final two games of that series against the Texas Rangers, backed hitting north of a 365 on base. Alex Bregman just always starts out a little bit rough, but he had a 3-hit game yesterday. Jose Altuve has been able to give you north of a 400 on base, and Jeremy Pena, after he was rough last season, he's been solid. The big issue is Jose Abreu, Mauricio Dubon at the bottom of the fold. Meanwhile, for the Kansas City Royals, Bobby Wood Jr. has been amazing. Guy is hitting north of a 300. He's been able to do a nice job providing some power. He, Salvador Perez, along with Nelson Velasquez, multiple home runs to their name this far this season, and MJ Melendez, 3 of home runs as well, but many of the Royals' home runs came against the Chicago White Sox beginning the season. We know where they are at in terms of their team. I have just not a lot of faith whatsoever that we're going to be able to get good support for Cole Reagans. So while I do think that Cole Reagans provides a relatively good start, I do think that in the end, do need to make the Astros a little bit of a favorite. I set them at a minus 112. So, hey, I was talking about being able to get north of a plus 110 to be able to take a shot on the Royals. If we get down to minus 112, I'd be willing to take the Astros as well. So a little bit of wait and see mode. If worse comes to worse, I would just take the run half with the Royals at more like a minus 145, minus 150. But going to be waiting on that money line price to move, and did set my total at an 8.2. So here at the 8.5, also looking at the under. 921, 922 on the betting board. The Walker Texas Rangers play host to the Oakland A's. Alex Wood goes for the A's, and Nathan Eovaldi is on the bump for Texas. And Texas is back to being a favorite between minus $2 and minus $2.15, plus 180 to plus 185. That number on Oakland, 8.5 to 9 is the total on the 8.5 Under is even money, and the over is minus 120. Seeing on the 9, the over is minus 120, and the under is even as well. So pick your poison there. And I did set my total at an 8.8. Personally, I would rather take a look at the 8.5 over rather than the 9 under, but that's just me. I do think that the Rangers should be able to go out there and have a relatively dominant performance as well. If you're taking a look at the run line for the Texas Rangers, right now that's right around about a minus 115 or so. And I do think that we need to adjust our numbers on the A's a little bit because they have been able to cover the run line in 6 out of their last 7 games. And plus 185 is my absolute minimum buy point on Oakland. And I'd be willing to take a plus 195, not a cent less, but I'd be willing to dive in at a plus 195 as Alex Wood did certainly have his issues last season while he was over with the San Francisco Giants, but he does a relatively solid job not giving up a whole gobble ton of walks or anything like that. He very much is going to be a little bit more of a pitcher contact guy. Was able to get right around about 8.5 strikeouts a season ago, and hasn't been too bad with the swing and miss stuff this season with 10 punch-outs and 8 and a third innings, but I do think that that's going to tame down a little bit. Goes up against someone in Nathan Eovaldi that he does a nice job of being able to give great command as well. We saw that last season prior to him getting injured for pretty much the back half of the season. He was giving out less than 2.5 walks per 9 innings, just 2 walks in his first 13 innings thus far this season. But when he gives up hard contact, he certainly does give it up. Texas has been playing very friendly to him recently, but you've got an Oakland A's lineup that I feel like is a little bit better than what a lot of people want to give it credit for. Zach Gallant, JJ Bleda, both of these guys have north of a 330 on base. And for Oakland, their numbers always get warped offensively because they play in one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks in all the big leagues in Oakland. When they're away from home, it's not like there's some sort of monster with regards to bats, but they're not quite as bad as they are at home. At home, they hit less than a 225 as a collective. That did go up away from home. JD Davis has been able to supply a pair of home runs. You've got someone in Brent Rooker who last season was an absolute monster to begin the season, has started out a little bit rough. He, Nick Allen, Seth Brown, these are guys giving you a sub-250 on base along Shea Langeliers, but I do think that there's going to be a little bit of upside there. And then for Texas, no question about it, you've got a lot of guys are able to rip the cover off the ball. You've got Wyatt Langford, who's a young prospect who has not been able to hit the home run ball quite yet, but has been pretty solid in his approach at the plate. That's going to be coming sooner rather than later. Adolis Garcia has been able to supply 4 home runs, and then you've got the likes of Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, Jared Walsh, Eli Carter, who've been able to give you north of a 370 on base this far this season. Carter not necessarily hitting for average, but finding a way to be able to get on base. And for the Rangers, they did fortify their bullpen a little bit in the offseason. Kirby Yates, David Robertson, they're relatively solid along with Jose Leclerc. I actually do like this bullpen this season. And for the Oakland A's, Danny Menace is actually a relatively solid reliever, and while I think that Mason Miller certainly should be a starter, if you're able to get him for multiple innings, that helps out as well. So at a plus 185 or higher, wanted to take a look at the Oakland A's, set their money line at a plus 195, and did tell my total at an 8.8. You're at the 8.5, going to be looking at the over as well. 923, 924 on the betting board. The Tampa Bay Rays, they hit the road, they're facing off against the LA Angels. Patrick Sandoval goes for the Halos, and Aaron Savali is on the bump for Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay is a favorite of any between minus 112 to minus 125, anywhere between plus 102 to plus 112. Your number on the Halos, 8.5 is the total, over and under, both at minus 110. And for the Rays, I set them at a minus 117. So we're pretty much in between my numbers with the minus 112 to minus 122. And at the minus 112, I'm willing to lay that number with the Rays. Less than savory performance yesterday against the LA Angels. And for the Rays, they've been a little bit out of sorts in terms of their offense this season. I do think that they're going to be able to pick it up a little bit. This was one of the better teams in the big leagues last season in terms of being able to find a way to get on base. They do have some strikeout tendencies, but even yesterday, they scored 1 run, but they only struck out 3 times. Their approach at the plate was halfway decent. They just need to find a way to be able to get the likes of Randy Arozarena, Yandy Diaz, Harold Ramirez all online. These were guys that hit well north of a 260 last season. All three guys hitting below a 240 right now. You've got Isak Paredes, who is giving you some nice power. He was able to hit 30 home runs last season, 310 on base. Ahmed Rosario, I think, is going to work out for the team as well. And Jose Siri has been one of the best base dealers in all baseball this far this season. And for the LA Angels, just a very top-heavy team. Taylor Ward, Mike Trout, these guys have been rock solid. Trout is already up to 5 home runs this season. Ward has given you 10-plus RBI. Both of these guys hitting north of a 295, but outside of that, what else are you going to be able to get? Logan Ohapi, Luis Ranifo at the bottom fold have been absolutely tremendous. And I do like Logan Ohapi's upside. Prior to him getting injured last season, was very good behind the plate defensively and at the plate. But Zach Neto, Mickey Moniak, Anthony Rendon, Brandon Drury, these guys are just not getting it going. And the Angels bullpen just as not compared to that of the Tampa Bay Rays. For the Rays, guys like Garrett Clevenger, Colin Boucher, and Pete Fairbanks. They're very rock solid, and they're going to be one of the best bullpens of the big leagues once again this season. Meanwhile, for the Angels, they're looking to kick the tires on Carson Fulmer once again. You've got Hunter Strickland, who's so ancient and is a big giant waste of money out there in the bullpen. Adam Simber's another reclamation project for them. Matt Moore, Carlos Aceves have been rock solid in the 8th and 9th inning, but the rest of this bullpen is a whole bunch of failed relievers from past seasons that are looking for pretty much one last gasp at the big league level, so I have a tough time being able to back them. And for Patrick Sandoval, I've just never been a fan of the way that he pitches. He doesn't necessarily give you a whole bunch of swings and misses. He gives up darn near 4 walks per 9 innings. The only thing that he does relatively okay is be able to mitigate the hard contact. Last season, in terms of home runs on a per 9 inning basis, he was giving up right in the neighborhood about 0.78. He's done that the last few seasons, but that said, I do have my question marks with them, especially with them pitching out there in Los Angeles, where, I mean, just the fences in general are a little bit strange. You've got the short left field fence, and I do think that that's going to be hurting them quite negatively this season. And for Patrick Sandoval, if you take a look at the home and road splits that he provided a season ago as well, it always felt like he was just a little bit more comfortable when he was away from home rather than when he was at home, supplying a 3.81 ERA away from home, 4.46 ERA when he was at home. And for Aaron Civale, when he came over to the Tampa Bay Rays last season, he was posting up a sub-3 ERA with the Cleveland Guardians, but his fielding independent was way more than a point higher when he was out there versus his ERA. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays, he posted up a 3.63 fielding independent compared to a 5.36 ERA. So we'll see if he can finally get things to iron out for him, as every single year it feels like his fielding independent is either a point higher or a point lower than his ERA. But he's really worked on the swing and miss stuff. When he came over to the Tampa Bay Rays, was getting about 11.5 punchouts per 9 innings, and in his 12 starts overall with the Tampa Bay Rays, has gotten 11.3 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's got a 4.55 ERA with Tampa Bay, but a 3.66 fielding independent. He has only been giving up about 2.2 walks per 9 innings. I think that he goes out there, lends a relatively solid start, though. I do think that the Angels, middle of the fold, they're going to generate a few runs, but I do think that the Rays get to Sandoval as well. Did somebody told him an 8.8, looking at the over, and with the Rays, one to lay up to a minus 116 on this money line. 925, 926 on the betting board. The Pittsburgh Pirates plays the Detroit Tigers. Casey Mize is on the bump for Detroit, and Martin Perez is on the bump for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a favorite of any between minus 125 to a minus 130, between plus 110 to a plus 118. Is your number on Detroit. 8.5 is the total. Over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. And I set the Pirates at a minus 106. I was willing to take plus 107 or greater with the Tigers. Casey Mize, not necessarily the world's greatest start for him. First time out, but after he overcame Tommy John surgery last year, was pretty much on the shelf for the last year, year and a half or so. I do think that he's going to be able to figure it out, completely change up his pitch mix in the offseason as well, and still had some pretty explosive stuff. Had 4 strikeouts in 4 1/3 innings, pair of walks. It wasn't a great performance. It wasn't a bad performance. And goes up against a starter, Martin Perez, that is very much a pitcher contact guy. Last season with the Texas Rangers, was only getting about 7 to 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. Doesn't do the world's greatest job in terms of command. And when he was away from Texas, he was certainly giving up rockets. It was so bad for him that he was relegated to the bullpen. Thus far this season, has been able to give you a relatively solid performance with 2.45 with his ERA through 2 starts, but 5 walks in his 11 innings. His fielding independent way higher than his ERA at this point. I do think that regression is going to come in from now. All they need from him pretty much is 5 solid innings, because this Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen, even with Ryan Borucki currently dealing with an injury, you've got Aroldis Chapman, David Benar in the 8th and 9th inning. I do think that Hunter Stranton has quite a bit of upside in the bullpen. I like Jose Hernandez. This is a very good bullpen, and for the Detroit Tigers, it's a unit that doesn't have that one lockdown closer or anything like that, but you look at all these guys like Jason Foley, Andrew Chafin, Will Vest. They pick up Shelby Miller, who had a sub-3 ERA with the LA Dodgers a season ago. You've got there like 4 or 5 guys that are going to supply for you a sub-3.50 ERA. They're very good situationally against righties versus lefties, and the big question for the Tigers is, can they generate enough offense? As they've had Spencer Torkelson get off to a relatively rough start to the season, while Riley Green has been able to supply you with a trio of home runs, just has not been able to do a great job of being able to get on base, hitting just .194 as he, Torkelson, Javi Baez, Mark Canna, Kerry Carpenter, all these guys are hitting a .210 or lower. For Baez, I don't think he's ever going to pick it up. He's just a big giant waste of money at this point. But that said, you do have some young guys with some upside. Parker Meadows is off to a rough season, but Colt Keith, he's been able to give you some good performances out there in the infield. A young 22-year-old who has quite a bit of upside. Don't know if he's going to supply a lot of boom, but I think that he's going to do a good job moving the line. The Pirates offense is certainly ahead of that of the Detroit Tigers, as you've got O'Neill Cruz, who's coming into his own, hitting a .300 with a pair of home runs. Brian Reynolds, a pair of home runs, .350 on base. You've been able to have quite a few guys be able to step up for Jack Swinitsky. But a little bit of a rough start to the season for him. Some 300 on base, as an SC been ripping the cover off the ball. But Jared Trovolo, he's been able to do a nice job. He's supplied a home run. He's hitting north of a 275 for the team as well. Pirates have the advantage with regards to the lineup. I do think that the Tigers have the pitching advantage. So being able to get north of a plus 110, I'm going to be looking at the Tigers on the money line. And this MHL at 8.3. I do think that the Tigers have a tough time scoring, but I do think that Mize and company going to be able to keep the Pirates off the board. So looking at the under and the Tigers on the money line, 927, 928 on the main board. The Miami Marlins, they are on the road facing off against the New York Yankees. Carlos Rodon is on the bump for the Yankees, and AJ Puck is on the bump for Miami, and Miami is an underdog between plus 160 and plus 175, and between minus 185 to minus 195 is that number on the New York Yankees. 8 is the total, over is minus 115, under is minus 105. We're looking at that Yankees run line, getting right around about a plus 110 there. I was willing to lay up to about a minus 110 for Carlos Rodon. It doesn't look like quite the same guy that we got like 2 to 3 years ago, but I mean, first two starts, 279 ERA, giving up 3 runs in 9 2/3 innings, just 7 strikeouts in that time span, and the 5 walks, that is a little bit concerning, but he looks a whole heck of a lot better than he did a season ago. That's marked improvement going up against the Astros and the Arizona Diamondbacks, both on the road. That's a relatively rough go of it, and yet the Yankees were able to pull out both games, so you feel good there. AJ Puck, meanwhile, is a career reliever that they're having to throw into a starter's role, and he's made it 6 innings and 2 starts, allowing 8 runs, 6 of which earned against the Pirates and the Angels, both at home. I mean, this is just not working out for them. He has issued 9 walks in 6 innings. The command is just not great. He's a short burst pitcher, and the Miami Marlins, because they've lost 3 starters on the injury list, have had to convert him into a starter, and right now the experiment just is not working. They've got a Miami Marlins team that yesterday scored as many runs as Greg Peterson. That would be 0. You lose Jorge Soler in the offseason, which means that Jake Berger and perhaps a little bit of Brian De La Cruz, that's your main form of offense in terms of power right now, and Luis Arraez just doesn't have the same plate sort of approach they had a season ago. Got lifted in the game late for Nick Gordon. He's hitting just a 250. That's been an issue. Tim Anderson has done an okay job of moving the line, but he provides no power whatsoever. And then the guys at the bottom of the fold, Nick Fortes, Vidal Brujan, Emmanuel Rivera, these guys are just giving you a big, giant nothing burger as well for the New York Yankees. While they're not going to be like the most dominant of dominant lineups or anything like that, being able to bring in someone in Juan Soto that, even when he's not hitting home runs, he's got 2 thus far this season, he just moves the line. That's so big for a Yankees team that didn't have that when Aaron Judge was out of the fold a season ago. And heck, I mean, the Yankees are trying to runs despite the fact that Judge right now has 2 home runs and is hitting a buck 75. You've had Giancarlo Stanton be able to find the fountain of youth. He's got 3+ home runs this season. Still not doing a great job of getting on base. A little bit of an all or nothing hitter, but at the very least, he's giving you now something. Anthony Volpe, he's had a nice approach at the plate along with Oswaldo Cabrera. The Cabrera out of the fold yesterday, he's been dealing with a few injuries as well. But the New York Yankees, they've got a far better bullpen as well. Ian Hamilton has issues over the weekend, but all in all, when Jonathan the Wise guy's out there, he's dealing with injuries once again. Even someone like a Caleb Ferguson, these are relatively good pieces to be able to get the ball to Clay Holmes. This is one of the better bullpens, in my opinion, in the big leagues. And I did like low key that Victor Gonzalez pickup. Meanwhile, for the Miami Marlins, once again, with AJ Puck now being out of the fold, with them not retaining Steven Oakert, it's a rough place to be, as you got Brian Hoying, who's able to give you a little bit of length, and I love George Soriano, a good multi-inning guy. Tanner Scott has been relatively okay, but Sixto Sanchez has not been working out. Luis Zobin is all over the place. If you're relying upon Matt Andrees for good innings, well, you're probably not going to be wanting to put too much faith into that, as he has not been great throughout his career, and I do think that the Yankees go out there much like they did yesterday, completely dominate this game. I don't think that the Marlins get completely shut out. Carlos Rodon still does not look like the Carlos Rodon of old, but AJ Puck is not worthy of being a starter right now at the big league level. I did something I told it at 8.8. I like the over end with the Yankees. Going to be willing to lay up to a minus 110 on that run line. And we wrap things up with 929, 930 on the betting board. It is the LA Dodgers on the road facing off against the Minnesota Twins. Louis Varland is on the bump for Minnesota. And Tyler Glass now, better known as Oppenheimer, is on the bump for the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are between minus 170 to minus 180 favorites. Between plus 145 to plus 157 is that number on Minnesota. 8.5 is the total. The under is minus 115. The over is minus 105, and if you're looking at the Dodgers laying a run half, anywhere between minus 102 to minus 110 is that number. I was willing to go up to a minus 108 for the LA Dodgers over the last 3 seasons. So This is the 2022 season, 2023 campaign, and here in the early goings of 2024. This team has played just 35 games where they won by one run, and overall in that time span, they've had a grand total of 220 wins. So they're very reliable laying that run and a half. You've got a Death Star lineup that features Mookie Betts supplying 5 home runs, hitting at 375. Shohei Ohtani, after a little bit of a rough go of it first few games, have to wonder if the off-the-field situation was affecting him a little bit, but he's back, 3 home runs, 380 on base. He looks tremendous. Oscar Hernandez is giving you 4 home runs. You do need a little bit of help at the bottom of the fold. Guys like James Altman, Chris Taylor, Gavin Lux off to a little bit of a rough start, but this is a Dodgers team that even with those guys off to a rough start, they're finding a way to get on base. They're one of the best teams at drawing walks in the big leagues. And for the Minnesota Twins, this team just has a lack of power with Royce Lewis out of the fold. This Twins team as a whole, they have provided 4 home runs this year with Royce Lewis, who has only seen 2 at-bats, providing one of them. Byron Buxton just is not in good form right now. About a 300 on base, 233 average. You just need a little bit more out of him. This team has stolen a grand total of 2 bases in 8 games, so they aren't creating a lot of havoc out there on the base path. Alex Kirloff, Carlos Correa, they're pretty much the only two guys other than Manuel Margot they're getting on base. They've got 3 guys that have seen an at-bat for this team. Other than Royce Lewis, they're currently hitting above a 233, and those are the 3 guys. So it has been really, really bad for the Twins with regards to the lineup, and it's a shame because the bullpen is not too bad. Jay Jackson, Cody Funderburk, not household names, but they're relatively okay. Brock Stewart, he was able to rock and roll his way to some good innings. I like the pickup of Steven Okert, sub 3.5 ERA last season with the Miami Marlins, and pretty comparable to the LA Dodgers and what they've got in the bullpen with Bruce Gratterall being on the fold. The Dodgers, they have a good way of being able to pick guys up off the scrap heap and be able to turn them into nice relievers. Ryan Brazier was really struggling last year since he put on Dodger Blue, a sub 2 ERA. Connor Brogdon got pretty much let go by the Philadelphia Phillies, and now he's on the Dodgers. I think that he could be a nice reclamation project. Evan Phillips is someone I do like in the bullpen as well, really able to lock down games. But with the Minnesota Twins, for Louis Varland, it's just all about keeping things out in front of him and not giving up the big giant mistake, because Varland has some relatively nice stuff. He's not an amazing swing and miss guy, but he's a good swing and miss guy, and he's relatively young. I believe that he's something like 25, 26 years old. Last season was able to give the team right around 9.5 punch-outs per 9 innings, only gave up 2.3 walks per 9 innings, but the 2.1 home runs per 9 innings absolutely killed him. And thus far this season, he made one start. He gave up in that start a grand total of 3 runs. He gave up the deep ball once again, and that was costly for him, costed him the game. And I do think that that's going to be the same thing that we see in this ordeal going against the LA Dodgers, and a guy in Tyler Glass now that he's just absolutely locked down. This guy over the last few seasons has been able to provide right around about 12 punch-outs per 9 innings for Glass. Now, sometimes he will be a little bit loose. He'll give up a few walks here and there, but has done a nice job being able to mitigate the hard contact thus far. His strikeout numbers have been a little bit down thus far this season, but I do expect them to rebound, and he's backed up by a rock-solid bullpen, so did set my total at an 8.1. Getting an 8.5, I'm going to be looking at the under. It's still pretty chilly out there in the Midwest, and I do think that Varland is going to be able to lock things down, but I do think that for the Minnesota Twins, with their just complete lack of offense, they just do nothing in this game. So I do like the Dodgers on the run line and the under, and that'll wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at GNR41. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And a big thanks to Jared Smith, who does great work here at the network. He joined me in the last segment, coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. And that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.